and welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. Nothing ticks better than Pundit Friday, which you can see if you're watching us on Facebook Live. We're here in the WNHH studio with the number one pundits in the media universe. Pundits like Babs Rawls Ivy.
Yeah,
the very vegan goddess of our grassroots radio operation, Belle of our ball, and managing editor of the Inner City News and host of WNHH's daily morning Love Babs Love Talk program.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Like hey. The flyest news hunter-gatherer this side of Fleet Street, the boss of the Budget Beat and the Beauty Beat, star New Haven independent reporter Markeisha Ricks.
Yeah, Markeisha. Yes.
The queen of quippery and quintessence of compassion, LaVosa Spana, publisher Norma Rodriguez Reyes.
Yeah, finally got a title.
And imitating, filling in for House Trump fan Harry Dros is the fearless and tireless reporter Lucy Gelman.
Yes,
who's also handing
yes.
a Facebook Live. Oh, there's someone else here, too.
Oh, God, here
He's
we go.
He's the polyp-free pain provider, keeper of the cure, weaver of wellness and wisdom, mellifluous and meritocratic, miner of melody, plow driver of peace, the driver out of demons, discord, and dissonance. He's the optimizer of opulence and opportunity, the undertaker of unfiltered utterance, the erudite earl of ergonomics, liberated lion of lucidity, maniacal monarch of mercy, blistering barbecuer of brain-dead bozos, our executioner of existential enemies, the alchemist of assonance and alliteration, the zealous zapper of xenophobia, sagacious sergeant sultan of swing, quintessential quipper of quotable quackery, grandee of grandiloquence and gastronomics, our prize protector against pusillanimity. The distinguished Duke of diplomacy in daytime. The king of conspiracy concoction, deacon of the dozens, bodhisattva of battle rap, missionary of modesty, mesmerizer of the masters, shaman of the shoreline, potentate of 360 state, recognized ringleader of risque, repartee, eighth wonder of the world, wizard of wise guy waggery, capo of casual conversation, first name in flame, daring don of dope deliberation, salt of spit. West Indian whisperer of wonk, the emperor of explosive exposition, esteemed elucidator of ebonics, top-tier talent from Trinidad and Tobago, dap tone, deliverer of decency. He's the maximal media maestro, the bodacious, bold-faced barista of bop, the chess master of chill, the prima practitioner of prop prestidigitation, the beyond just somewhat honorable high priest of hip-hop, right reverend of rapture, reigning racketeer of riffitude, sanctified sayer of the slow-witted, never late for supper, decorated dazzling and indefatigable dunker and dryer of the dinner dishes, maximusologist Joe Ugly of the Joe Ugly Show of the
Happy
morning.
Yeah, we're not going to have time for pundit here.
But we know what the biggest
Happy
new
head- 2018.
The biggest news headline in the universe is right here. Joe Ugly made it through a colonoscopy.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
My God.
Good work, my friend.
No, don't tell me we're going to be discussing that in the show today.
No, why not?
Well, for those of us who are 50, well, this becomes...
Know, no, we can discuss it because everybody has those, right?
Yeah, at 50.
Some of us have it every 2 or 3 years. But here's my question. We talked about this a little bit before I came on the air, and I thought Markeisha had the best theory. I am a guilty party in this phenomenon. Mm-hmm. When males start having colonoscopies after 50, that's all we talk about. We have a male coworker in this office. Norma said by tomorrow, Obama's going to know that you had a colonoscopy. Women have these too. Uh-huh. You know, we go through all the prep, we drink that gook and throw right. up, or not throw up, you know, poop it all out. And then uh-huh. we come in the next day and they poke on us and get out the polyps. Uh-huh. It's actually not that bad a procedure. I mean, the prep is a little gross, but you're out. No, you're out. It's no big deal. But why is it that the guys talk about it all the time and the women don't?
No, men don't talk about it as much, Paul.
Thing you said when you came in.
No, that's you and I. But look, that's one of the reasons why I'm talking a lot about it. It's because I think it's very important that, especially in the African-American community, we don't talk about this procedure and why we should get it. I mean, in the black community.
And the Latino community, too?
How about white guys like me? Why do we talk about it? Because my friends all do. We all talk about the.
Oh, I think men talk about it because they don't go put their feet in stirrups for anything.
And why do women put their feet in stirrups, Markeisha?
Because we get pap smears and have babies.
Now, that's the thing. I was witness to the baby thing, and I've always felt guilty about what you guys go through.
As
you
should.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, colonoscopy is like having a paper cut.
Right.
obviously, compared
but
to
the messed up
baby.
Thing about, like, even if you don't have a baby, you still got to go get a pap smear. So you still have the feeling of putting your feet in stirrups, even if you're not going to go push
and
out anything.
And poked and probed. It's the invasive thing, too.
It's very invasive.
Like, for me, just having a doctor.
Work, I was sleeping.
Exactly. They don't put you out for a pap smear. You got to stay awake.
And then when they
have
a baby.
And have awkward conversations with your gynecologist.
Yes.
And then with the baby, you got to push. And let me, I mean, Norma and Babs, you've been, I mean, is there anything more painful?
What?
Having a baby.
Oh, I don't know. I never had any. I got my children the old-fashioned way.
I've had it.
I adopted them.
You brought them out of here? I've had it described to me.
My mother had 13. So.
But it seems like, and I had a theory, and this is dangerous. I start doing science theories. I have a theory that kids are so.
You're pretty good at your white math, though.
They're so. I am pretty good at my white math. The kids are so adorable when you see them when they're your baby. You just can't imagine anything more than loving this person more than anything and protecting them. And my theory is that it's genetic survival because it's so painful having that baby, the way it's described to me, that moment when you're pushing at the end, that you have to forget how painful that was or you're never going to have another baby unless you're looking at how beautiful
such a male
that
on
is.
This. You're such a male on this thing. You're just talking about the pushing part. My wife went through 38 and a half hours of it and then had to go get him with a C-section.
And my wife broke her tailbone both times, like at that moment. Crack. But also, just the way that biology is set up, that it's so hard to squeeze out that baby at the end. She had the C-section.
Oh, birthing is overrated.
But tell us, Norma. Norma, you're the expert here. Is that true?
See, I can endure pain. Physical pain, I can endure. So I had my three kids through the Lamaze method, in which I didn't.
So you didn't have any drugs or anything?
No. You know how they normally put,
didn't do the epidural?
No, they didn't do the epidural.
I'd be a baby just having that shot in my spine that's supposed to take away the next pain.
But poor,
let's face it, men are wimps. That's just what this is all about.
Absolutely.
They are.
Men
are
wimps.
Are, thank
I told
goodness.
My wife, if I had to push my son out, he'd be going to college in my bed. Wake up. Pay attention.
So, Norma, this wasn't the most painful thing you've ever had in your life?
I'm sorry?
You said you could endure pain, Norma.
Yes.
But was this the most painful thing you ever had in your life?
Yes.
But you had two more?
Yes.
Any regrets?
Not at all.
All right. Well, I'm going to not regret to remind you that you listen to
Pundit. I would have made a great, you know, they
midwife?
Hire women. No,
oh, no, a surrogate.
To have their I would have made an excellent surrogate.
Surrogate.
Oh.
Wow. Never had any. You know how women have they throw up, they have morning sickness. They never had any of that stuff.
Well, you are not a surrogate, but you are a genuine pundit. Pundit Fridays at WNHH Radio 103.5 FM and live stream newhaven.org. We're also on Facebook Live on the Independent page, folks. The reason I want to do another ID was I want to remind people this is a news headline story show.
Yes.
And even though Joe's colonoscopy is a big deal, we have other news headlines I did want to mention, including the fact that thousands of people are expected to be lining up at Hill House not to watch a basketball game, even though they're outside the Floyd Little Center.
Now.
2 days, starting 6 a.m. Friday and Saturday. This happens once a year somewhere in Connecticut. Today it's in New Haven, where dentists come for free. 100 dentists in the gym with 1,400 volunteers. And they're going to spend all day today and tomorrow giving free dental care to people, getting their molars filled, you know, getting cavities filled. They said they were going to do a few root canals if they're short, other x-rays. What strikes me about this, because whenever this happens, the media always says, wow, these people are standing forever. They come from all over. They drive from all over the state. So many people don't get dental care. And a lot of people who otherwise have health insurance, they either don't get dental insurance or if they're on Medicaid or Medicare, they can't find dentists who will treat them. They drive an hour or more because the reimbursements are so low. How did we get to this crazy situation in our country?
That's a good question because I never understood, as someone who's had a lot of dental work done in her life, I've never understood why dental health care is not considered a part of your overall health care, given that, like, we know stories of people who've had abscesses so bad that they've, you know, gotten they've died, or that they've had
infections,
or it impacts your heart, and I don't understand why it's not treated as a holistic.
I got
of
a
thing.
Theory.
Okay,
like to hear it.
I think that commercial interests in this country and right wing groups that have dominated the debate have defined healthcare not as a right, but as something everyone should have to pay for. And that any effort by government to do what every other government in every industrialized country in this world does, as well as the countries we criticize as not doing a good job, like communist countries like Cuba, they all have public health care because they say it'll be cheaper for everybody, delivered as well, if everybody has to get it and they're on the system and everybody has a right to it. And because they convinced people in this last election to vote against the health care plans they like by calling it Obamacare, the name of the black guy. Well, those very same people in polls love the health care plan that's actually called the ACA. And we convince people that if they can afford to go to the doctor, then if they can't afford to go to the doctor, then they have no right to go to the doctor because that's against our American freedom. They say it's not freedom. The latest debate about repealing Obamacare, they talked about you should have the freedom whether or not to go to the doctor and pay for health insurance. And secondly, we have a health insurance industry that exists to get all the money they can from you to cover as little as you can. I actually am one of these lucky people who have dental insurance. And I just got over $1,000 for Crown. I just found out it's not covered, even though I have dental insurance. I found out why. They claim there's small print that in the first few months of a new plan, you can't be covered for major work. Mm-hmm. I mean, they always have all these reasons they can't cover you so they can get your money. So I think it's a sickness and it's a political failure because when we have the evidence that our outcomes are no better this way and often worse, people don't live as long, that there's cherry-picked examples of someone having to wait longer in Canada to get a certain kind of specialized operation without mentioning that the vast majority of the country loves the plan, glad they have it, and gets care earlier. That in Cuba, they actually have better results on how they deliver health care. I think that's why so many people are lined up at the dentist today in New Haven.
You know, I think if the Democrats had a real sort of sense of how to unspin this foolishness, when they can take the numbers and say preventative care is a better deal than sending people to the emergency room for their primary care health. And if we can get in front of issues before things become catastrophic, that in the long run is a better deal fiscally for us.
So Babs, Babs, I'm going to throw one at you, a little shade. Okay, ready?
Go ahead.
We had the chance to have this debate. In the last presidential election, mm-hmm. we had a candidate convincing a vast majority of Democrats and independents mm-hmm. that we should have a single-payer health system. Hillary Clinton, who was the leading candidate for the Democrats who was getting the corporate money, dismissed it and made fun of it and mocked it. "We don't live in Denmark, Bernie," she said to Bernie Sanders, to much applause at a debate, meaning that your nice pie-in-the-sky plan that works so well for Norway or Sweden or Denmark. Or she didn't even mention Cuba or Canada or France or England, can't work here because we're a different, better kind of country. And she actually used that as a way to win her party's nomination. I think the Democrats kicked that back into the gutter.
But here's the thing. Neither one of them are president at the moment. So clearly the lesson here is don't do that. Don't do what those two did because neither one of them are president
at the
moment.
That wasn't
the
issue. I think the lesson was that was a popular issue, but Hillary destroyed the Democrats' ability to press the popular issue and then allowed the other side to destroy.
That's why we need a Democrat who is much more free thinking and not so concerned about, you know, trying to play to whoever. Even if it's money, whatever. Yes, money. We need somebody who is like, you know what? I'm going to rise above that and do the right thing and sell the message of doing the right thing over and over. I think that's a better message. And I think people can embrace that rather than, you know, feeling some kind of way about, you know, Denmark or.
Well,
you
Joe's on the pain meds, but we're going
to
still, he's got the energy to talk.
All right. Go ahead, Joe Ugly. Bring it.
First of all,
they really did sedate you yesterday, huh?
No.
Obama do have is also the name of the guy, not just the black guy, the guy.
Harry just wanted to mention that the hatred for Obamacare based on no merits of the plan because people actually liked the plan didn't have to affect who was a black guy, but he was just the guy they
really,
all
hated. Really?
Yeah, point taken. Right. Lucy, did you want to add that since you're filling in for Harry?
Oh,
Can I push back?
Joe, okay, Joe, you're off the pain meds. What do you got to say?
First of all, what Babs said about the healthcare plan and how the Democrats should be able to put it, the one thing about Democrats is they don't know how to speak to the average man. Republicans are great campaigners, terrible governors. I said it. How do they campaign? They get sound bites. If you took what you just said and put it in a nice sound bite, it'll work. Second of all, I'm going to
Bernie put it in a sound bite with no money and got millions of people to vote for him.
I'm going to give you the pushback on that. What Hillary Clinton said was, how are you going to pay for it? And hold on.
And she was wrong about that, too.
How was she wrong?
Because how does every other country in the world pay for it? You force everybody part of it. The costs go down. You get rid of the insurance companies and the doctors get rich, but not ultra rich.
But here's the thing. I heard a piece in France. This is what France has said. they know that they will never be able to afford what they do. So they go in, they go into an understanding that they're always
going
to, yeah, it's always going to be a loss. They're right. always going to take a hit. But the greater good is healthcare for right. everybody.
But wait, but Joe has selective however. History here, Joe.
No, no.
Hillary yeah. Clinton answered Hillary Clinton's question yeah. because after she got the nomination, she needed Bernie's voters. So all of a sudden, she got religion. Did you notice she changed her position on that? When after Bernie was out of the way, so she was no longer at risk of losing vote to someone who actually stood for something good, she actually said, oh, yeah, let's go toward universal health plan. Now let's start making Medicare for all at an earlier age, which is single payer. Mm-hmm. So in fact, Hillary Clinton herself knew that she was lying and she was distracting people to get the corporate money to stop the popular will for single payer health care from succeeding.
And neither one of them are president.
Back to what Bab said earlier, and she just repeated, neither one are president. But you're listening to us on Pun the Pun.
At 103.5 FM. Also live stream at newhavenindependent.org on WNHH Radio, the best pundits in the universe.
Can I just say, though, I know we couched this in the context of ongoing health care reform and what's going to happen to it. But clearly this separate track for health care and dental care have always been separate. Like they've never traveled together, have they? Like in a meaningful way.
Except for the independent.
So I don't know if there's a lobby specifically in the healthcare lobbyists beyond, like I don't know. I get right. it if people don't want to pay for cosmetic surgery.
Right.
But at the end of the day, like root canals are freaking expensive.
They are.
As someone
who's
had
a good point, Markeisha. I wish we had more information on that. What is it separate about dentistry?
Yep, but what about vision? Vision is the
same way.
Why isn't vision
the same way?
And that's
somebody
very
who's
important.
Been wearing glasses since fourth grade.
But why did they always cover Viagra but not the women's Viagra?
Well,
but you know,
tambourine?
We also kind of step back from thanking the 100 dentists who yes. go there. You know, I was talking to Jerry Alexander, was here, who's one of the dentists been involved for 10 years. It's called Mission of Mercy. He's a New Haven dentist, does every year. He gets psyched. He gets
you talked to him yesterday because I was listening to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. And he comes in at 3 in the morning, gets ready for 3 hours for them to come in. He says he feels so great when he's done.
Is that? Oh, I.
Would you like to open a free clinic?
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Well, how do you pay? The problem, Marquise, is how do you pay for it, right?
Year. This is a once a year thing.
Yeah,
don't
people have to.
Him.
But also, how's he going to make a living, right? How are you going to pay for the supplies?
He's got to eat, too.
And his assistants have to eat. So they all. That's one thing I said to him. I said, you know, I don't mean this at all as a criticism at all. I think it's great what they do, and they're heroes. When people come in and do that kind of one shot, throw down, help everybody right now with the problem, it doesn't attack the root of the problem. It's not a root canal. It's a new polish on the tooth. But it's still a great thing to do, and he can't personally change the problem with our national healthcare system. But that is always a question that's in my mind
about
day of service volunteerism,
know,
which is great to
but
do.
But that's true in any profession, right?
It
because
is.
Lawyers do work pro bono. All kinds of people. I mean, I do stuff for free, right?
Right.
We all do stuff for free.
So we all do
all
stuff
time.
For free because the greater good means something. Because
the need isn't being met.
I was about to say also because there's no safety net, or it's a safety net that has holes in it. Like yeah. And in America, that is American as apple pie, is having safety nets with holes in it.
Now, this person New Haven, I think, really does do both at once. That's Benita Grubbs, Reverend Benita Grubbs, yeah. Christian Community Action.
My and sorority
they,
sister.
They do everything on two tracks. So they will do the immediate problem. They have a food bank. They have a shelter for people who need homes. They have a transitional living space to help them get on their feet. And they also train women on welfare to lobby the legislature to change the laws. And they also do longer-term skill building, whether it's how to manage money or how to get a job or get more education so that you have a long-term solution. I always felt like she's the person who marries those two wings of addressing Joseph.
I mean, I think I think that's a wonderful thing. But I think moving forward now, that we have to stop having poor people do more of the heavy lifting on their behalf. We need to have rich people do the lifting and lobbying for poor people now. I mean, I think that has to happen because I think that can carry much more weight and influence when your friends at the country club and the golf clubs and all these other places can talk to their friends in these places that make these decisions.
Well, that's a good thought.
You know,
that's good. I like how that sounds, but in all reality, I mean, they don't have a vested interest in.
But that's what I mean.
Standing up.
They've got to take some ownership, and they've got to have some kind of conscious raising around this issue because poor people can't continue to because it's falling on deaf ears. And then when laws and legislations are you know, are penalizing to poor people. I mean, you know, poor people are always, you know, they can't smoke, they can't drink, they can't do this, they can't do that. But yet the masses, the larger masses of wealth, you know, they do all these things and no one ever says to them, let me, before you go to your hedge fund, let me drug test you.
You see, there it is. Hold on. Here it
we
is.
We don't do any
You're
of that.
You're trying to get over that big green wall. You know, that green wall of money. Nobody. You know.
But there's a theory that marries both of what Joe and Babs says. That people will act in their self-interest and wealthy people disproportionately affect the government. But maybe the appeal to them is don't steal, the Hippocratic Oath. So now our tax laws transfer wealth to the wealthy through our tax code and through Trump, especially even more of them. But Democrats did too, starring Robert Strauss at the DNC back in the late 80s, early 70s. If you could appeal to the wealthy not to steal from the poor, I still think it's up to the working class, middle class, poor people to push for their own political power and elect representatives who then will stop having a tax code that lets the rich off so much, taxes them more, and then spends the money in ways that poor people.
I mean, I'm not suggesting that they shouldn't. I'm just saying
I don't think there could be an absence
other people have
for political
to come.
Action.
Yeah, they have to come. The wealthy have to come to this with some real wholesale investment in this issue. They can't just like, well, you know, my little housekeeper, my maids and all these people, you know, I feel bad for
and
them.
That's it.
But, you know, but I can't possibly pay them, you know, right? I can't give them health insurance. I, you know, no retirement fund. I can't help their children go to school.
It's more like if the wealthy had stopped lobbying to kill. If they would stop lobbying to kill Medicare for All, single pay everyone, you want to call it, then... Oh, yes, Lucy. Oh, yeah, Lucy, what's
saying? Well, I was just... I was wondering if I could jump in. This is me as Lucy, not me as Harry. I think so. But you know, going back to really quickly, Markeisha, the cleavage between sort of medicine and dentistry as we see it, I think another thing at play, and Babs, this absolutely resonates with what you are saying, is how we're educating our doctors versus how we're educating our dentists. If you look at a lot of medical schools, they teach their students to run or have free clinics. That's actually part of being in medical school. You see that at Yale. You see that at Pritzker, which is at the University of Chicago. You see that at WashU. You see that at a lot of programs. To the best of my knowledge, there's no analog for dentistry. And so it's just something to think about.
All right. There you heard it from Lucy Gelman. Now, Lucy Gelman knows all about it because she was on the first maiden ride of the party bike. So she really knows what's going on in New Haven.
I'm like, Lucy, why aren't you calling me to do these fun things?
So that's a local historian, Colin Kaplan, and another guy who grew up like him in the Beaver Hills neighborhood, Christian Burkhart, who's a cop. They're in
and
their Kaplan, 30s.
Right?
And Colin Kaplan.
Yep.
They started this vehicle. They brought it here. That's in other parts of the world, I guess, Lucy, but not. There was in the Northeast.
And in New Orleans.
And a lot
there's
of people,
one in New Orleans, too.
A lot of people pedal a bike around, but bike, they steer it. They tell you a little history. They go on a pub crawl. What did you think of that ride, Lucy?
I thought it was great. I think it's a great thing to have in New Haven. It's about $35 a person, which I will say as a young professional, I thought was actually a little bit expensive. But I think as a resource, it's a fun new thing to have around town. And as we were riding around, people were stopping on the street. They were asking Colin and Christian, hey, what is this? How do I get involved? How do I do this with my friends? And so I always think, you know, sort of new funky things in New Haven are great.
Do you actually pedal? Does it go because people are pedaling?
So there is an engine that meets the state of Connecticut's motor vehicle requirements. The minimum
motor
vehicle.
So if I drink
vehicle,
enough,
if
I don't
you
have
drink
to pedal.
Enough, yeah, but please don't fall off.
Oh, no,
don't
fall
off.
I won't fall off.
And did everybody get drunk?
I was about to say, how do you not get a DUI, though?
I did not. So I guess open container laws are different if you were a passenger in a moving vehicle. That is something I learned, actually, from one of our...
I didn't know this either.
Yep, from one of our...
Markeisha was asking about the actual riding. So let me see if I understand it. If people pedal, that does power the thing.
Yes.
But if you're drunk and you can't pedal, they have someone who's not drunk who's steering the thing, and it has a motor to get it through.
It has real power, but it also needs people power. And if there are fewer, I think, than 5 or 6 people, the bike can't go. And so that's one thing that they
talked
about.
So we could just park and drink.
If you
also see the city, you go around, and you hit these colorful.
How many people
water
fit
hosts.
We just park
on this
drink.
Bike?
15. Yeah. 15
oh,
people.
We should do this. This is the a first, fundraiser, Paul.
15
yeah, I
people.
Know. The first
and how many hours do they go out for?
About 2 hours.
Oh, wow. Do,
so now I want to say an old fogey thing. Ready?
Uh-oh, what?
Lucy and I have two perspectives on this,
oh.
as do some of our commenters.
Now I'm closer to your age, Paul, so what is this?
I'm right there.
I don't spend a lot of money on entertainment, and I'm really cheap. But if I did, like, I can't buy a ticket to the Schubert, for instance, to go see a play. But
no,
it costs a lot, like $70.
He doesn't want to buy it. It's not that he doesn't have the money to buy it.
Well, $70.
Paul, you know what? You're the press.
Oh yeah, yeah. But then I don't write about it because I'm not big on musicals. Like, anyway, so okay. But in any case, I don't see how 35 is a lot of money because they're running a business. They have to get insurance.
I
they have to pay
too.
People. I mean, $35 for 2 hours of entertainment.
$900,000 loan or something.
So, in
right?
other words, you have a historian telling you about stuff around town. Uh-huh. You're getting to go around town with a whole group of people to fund places. You have someone taking care of the safety of it with the insurance and steering it.
Look at,
how can it be viable? Like, one guy did post, one commenter said, well, in Troy, it's $25. But I thought that's your answer. In Troy, it's $25. It might as well be minus $20 in Troy. You're in New Haven, where you want to go around. You're going to pay $30. How could you not pay $35 for
this? I was thinking, though, like, if so business model mind, $35, like, might be, for me and Lucy, we might do it once. We might not do it every weekend.
Right.
That's kind of expensive.
Or
in that
you go to a play. Like, I might buy that theater ticket once
go to
in
the
5 years.
Once. And you know, So
maybe
I
the business model is if you want to get them to go often. Sometimes you go volume
it's like it's a
with
question
lower
of
prices.
Whether you want them to go often or not.
Now the question is: 14 individuals pedaling, or is it 14 plus the driver? You know, what I mean, like 14
so,
plus
yeah,
the driver.
So there are 6 seats with pedals on each side, and then there's a back seat. So if you can't pedal, and this was actually great because I can pedal a stationary bike. I was fine, right?
6 plus 1 is 13.
Okay, wait. Okay, then 7 plus 7. But
right.
No. There's a seat that seats 3. It's like a bench.
Ooh,
so it's 12,
squad.
13, 14, 15.
Yeah. Those which, three don't pedal.
My squad right. could be there.
Which is great because if you don't, like, say you have a leg injury and you want to go or you're just lazy, you can sit on the bike and not go. But actually, Colin Kaplan's wife jumped on and she had injured her back and she couldn't be pedaling the bike.
Right.
So it was great. She hopped on.
Okay.
Now you guys have seen the inside of editor-reporter conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I think that's great. I will say also for me, I keep in mind that sometimes, you know, Paul, for instance, or Markeisha, like we might do this once. Sometimes I'm paying for friends who can't pay for themselves also. And sometimes I have friends who, you know, one person might say, oh, $35 for me isn't that much because I work at Bain. And another friend might say, well, I'm doing AmeriCorps right now, so I really can't afford
it. But it's the people who don't earn much that I see spending $12 for a cocktail.
That's so true. That is so true.
I mean, I would never spend $12 for a drink.
Man, Paul, what do you spend money on? What's your thing? What's the thing that you were like, you know what?
Here
whatever
comes.
It is, I'm paying it.
My family's health care.
Okay.
Hey, Dave.
Right. My
health care. Oh, wait a minute. At the end of the day, we're looking at what? $5.25 for $2.
You're right, Babs. I'm unusually cheap for a consumer. I really don't like the, like, I get produce, you know, I get the bulk grains and everything, you know.
There's nothing wrong with that. No,
I would never buy bottled water. I think is sick. I think in New Haven, the water is better than anything you buy in a bottle.
I was getting ready
and
to say
people pay dollars
well,
for
if
that.
If I buy bottled water, it's just because I need water. It's not because I think it tastes better than the water at my house.
Oh, I do.
Because I'm always telling my kids, I'll buy you a bottle.
No,
bottle
there,
of water.
There's a big difference in the taste. Come on, I
water
get it.
In New Haven is good.
Yeah. I mean,
it's good.
I like this.
Water.
I will say this.
Good.
I like the idea of this riding thing. I don't know how it got connected to a pub crawl, but that's okay too. Because
they went to Three Sheets, right? And they went to Rudy's.
They went to Three Sheets, and then they ended at Beer Collective, which is great. So I mean, that's the party. The beer is not included in the price. So you're thinking about.
But
that
I bet
too.
If they work with these little bars like Ordinary and Spot. You know, the cigar, the Owl People.
The Owl Shop, which is one of their
and
sponsors.
And 116 Crown. All these trendy little hip bars. And just like...
So you get healthy, get healthy pedaling, then you beat the secondhand smoke at the Owl.
Yeah, no, it's negative calories because you're pedaling, but you're also drinking. So it's negative calories.
But it's positive punditry on Friday. Punditry on WNHH Radio, your home for community radio at 103.5 FM.
Oh, my God.
Live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. Well, students were on the march this week, folks. Monday morning, a lot of 100 students, high school students, instead of going to school, they marched downtown. They said, Trump inspired us. We want some action. They were going down the street saying, hey, hey, ho, ho, board ed's got to go. Hey, ho, board go. Donnie Harp's got to go. So they said, like, why you guys think they got to go? They said, well, we got to keep Obamacare. I said, okay. And our demands are that we got to have raise the age that you could try it as an adult to 21, which is something. But then they said the Board of Ed's student members should be able to vote rather than just be advisory, which I thought was a great freaking idea. And so did Mayor Harp when she was here. They want to be involved in the search for a new superintendent. So they had about 15 demands. And I thought it was a great rally. They were very energetic. They were excited. They went to City Hall. And then some of them got suspended.
Really?
So I asked, why did you get suspended? And a couple of them go to schools that have social justice curricula, high school in the community, New Haven Academy. So I checked in with those principals, and they said, well, at HSC, they said, well, you know, we have courses in time. You have your clubs. You can do social justice.
Oh, they want to control how right. they do social justice.
New Haven Academy said, you know, we have certain rules that they understand. So, for instance, if you're walking out of school when you're already there without permission, that has consequences. If you come in without an excuse with a parent, that has consequences. So they didn't. I don't know if they got suspended if they didn't show up in the first place, if the parents gave them the note. But I actually, at first I said, well, gee, what hypocrites if you have social justice curriculum and then you suspend them for going on a protest. But then I changed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's how I thought about it as a learning moment. I said, you don't get mad at them. So one thing you learn about when you protest is how you protest and what you decide, mm-hmm. what the consequences you'll take on. So for instance, how did you decide we're going to do this during school rather than after? There might be a good reason to do it during school. If there's a good reason for doing it during school, then you say, is it worth my getting a suspension for that? And then there might not be a good reason for doing it in school. You got to think it out. And then if you're getting that suspension, if the schools instead of being mad at you, if they're having, and I think they did this New Haven Academy because they do things right there. Yeah. Maybe if they're sitting with them, they wouldn't let us in because they say
my
it's
son
private.
Is over there.
They say the kids, you know, conversations are private. We can't let you in and listen to this. But I got the sense you sit down with them and say, you know, we love the idea of protesting. These are interesting views. How did you come to this decision? When you protest, like some people say, I'm going to get arrested. That's this important. But it's not always important to get arrested at a protest. It doesn't always advance the cause. You think, how am I? You got to, one part of learning to do activism is going to have an impact and be meaningful rather than just feel powerful because you're yelling through a bullhorn about stuff that the people you're yelling at can't control, is figuring out how does each of my actions advance the goal I want to advance. So did doing it during the school day advance the causes they were trying to promote? If it did not, getting an unexcused absence might be a fun and productive way to learn. It's not going to stop them getting to college. I mean, it might be a fun, productive way to learn.
Are you sure it's not going to stop them? Yeah.
So tell me, am I just being old fogey here? What's the deal?
No, I think so, Lucy. I mean, I think since you said that, that was a wonderful, wonderful way because I think everything, listen, we teach kids all the time. Every decision you make has a consequence,
right.
Good, bad, or otherwise.
And we want you to be an activist.
Right.
We want you to go on the street.
But it's going to cost you.
And we want you to think about it.
Right.
Before you, like, for instance, everyone's been stopping all the traffic in New Haven where everybody voted for Hillary Clinton. I think Trump got -4% and Hillary got about 150%. Are you helping your cause when 5 days in a row people can't get home at commuting times because you're going on the street instead of the sidewalk? Now, maybe it's so important that day to do that you need to stop them, think about it, but I think it is a good idea for activists to consider each step and each move, but a lot of them do. My only concern is I think like at HSC when you say, well, we already have that curriculum, I think that's a little tone deaf and clueless and kid's not going to learn from that. They're going to learn that grown-ups are hypocrites.
Right.
But if you do sit and talk to them in that context, I think this was a pretty wonderful teaching moment. But again, tell me why I'm an old fogey and wrong.
I can't call you an old fogey or such. You know, I've had
more colonoscopies, Joe. I've had at least 7.
My dude. Mm. You know, like, you
well,
know.
Maybe 5.
I often share the story of my son and I where once we had a disagreement and he ran upstairs to his, you know, he went up to his room. A few minutes later, my wife went up to see him and then she came back down and said, your son left a note for you. And I go upstairs and, you know, she said, I got to go upstairs to see it. So I go upstairs to see this note and it's pasted on his door and it says, no a-holes allowed. And
oh my goodness, did it actually have the S&S in it?
It had no a-holes allowed.
But did he spell out the word?
Nope.
He said a dash?
Yeah. So
that is so sweet.
So
the kid didn't want to call his father an asshole.
Am I my dude?
Yeah. but he actually wrote a dash dash hole, so he loves you and respects you.
And that's when I kicked open the door, I looked at him and I said,
how old was he?
He was about 13 or so, and I told him.
That is so sweet. He is a nice guy.
That's exactly what I told him. I said, you know, I look at him, and everyone was like, you know, not everyone. My wife was looking at me like, oh, God, he's going to go at him. And he went to rip it down.
You're going to get ugly.
Said, he went to rip it down. I said, no, leave it up there. I'm proud of you. And he was in shock. And I said, you edited yourself. You could have write the ASS.
I'm so proud of you. I'm grounding you for only 5 weeks for being rude to Joe Ugly.
Yeah, actually, I look at him and I said, you know what? You have just learned how to protest properly. I'm never going to take away your right to protest. You understand. You protest how I treated you, and that's okay. And you edited yourself in your protest. Now you learn how to protest. From that moment on, he understood there's a way to do protest. And he'd always tell me.
And is he doing it now?
Oh, when he was over there just last year when they had the big protest going on. He understood at Yale. He was understanding there's still a way to do it. You just don't go and cuss people out in your face and call them, there's a way to protest.
Well, way to go, Joe Ugly.
I work on it.
In the parent department. And way to go, Paul Dens, at least for Paul Dens.
Oh, what did Paul do?
This guy owns a lot of buildings downtown. Yes, he does. And sometimes there are controversies.
Is he single?
I don't know. He's an older guy.
I don't care. I need a loft. Okay.
So he buys a lot of downtown property. And sometimes he was criticized for sitting on it. Right. Sometimes he fixed it up. He has that all the pissoir lot on Orange Street, which he wants to build up. He was for a while sitting on it, but then he fixed up the Exchange Building. That's the corner of Chapel and Chapel and Church. It's a historic building.
Oh, yes, CVS.
And
he really did a lot of work on it.
It's a CVS now. It used to be a bank building. Mm-hmm. Check this out, guys. He bought it in 2013 for $2.7 million.
Yep.
$2.7 million. Mm-hmm. He just sold it for $6.4 million.
He sold it? It sold?
Mary O'Leary had a great story about it in the register. $6.4 million.
What building is this?
The one at the corner.
The corner building across from the green.
Across from the green.
On the corner right there?
Yeah, right
on
the corner.
It used to be...
The bank of Boston.
Yeah.
He went from 2.7 to 6.4 million in 3 years. A little more than 3.5 years.
Wow. Yeah. Is he single?
Now he's got 195 Church, which is at the corner of Elm and Church, the old New Haven Savings Bank. He's doing a lot of work on that.
Don't he have the old right up the block here? The Union, First Union building?
Not Union Trust.
The old Union Trust?
That's a New York developer.
Oh, okay.
And they put the luxury condos. Right. No, he's doing off. So the old New Haven Savings Bank building, Where is that one?
Right there on the corner by City Hall?
Yeah, that one.
He's at either
end of that mega block.
Yeah.
Sure, he sold the one on Chapel.
Yeah.
And now he's bought and is fixing up an Elm that used to be New Haven Savings Bank Tower. He's put in a middle kind of co-working space. They brought in a Brazilian, Marquisha was there this week, a Brazilian tech hub. He's putting in, a fitness area. He's going to want to get us a restaurant on the first floor.
I need a loft. I need a 3,000 square foot loft. You think?
What are you ready to pay?
I don't know.
That's 3,000 square feet?
Is he single?
No, Paul is.
That's the big question. I don't have the answer. I don't have that data.
He also owned that block over there that caught on fire back in 07.
That's what I'm talking about in Orange. Some people said he hadn't done enough work on that one.
Right. The Foot Locker over there by Foot Locker.
Yeah. And they thought when they tore down, it was by non-neglected Orange and Chapel. But he does have a plan with the city to build a bunch of stores and apartments that home mixed use deal on that corner where the pissoir is. So we'll see. But meanwhile, the big talk on policing this week was the Civilian Review Board. We talked about that a little bit last week. We had a referendum in this city in 2013, and the majority in the Board of Alders, the Unite Here majority, put through that referendum. They said the people want a new version of our Civilian Review Board to hold the cops accountable and review what they do, and we want it to have teeth. So they actually wrote it into our charter, which is unusual. That's like putting something in the Constitution. We have to have the city agency. So it took them more than 3 years to write that proposal that they themselves wanted to have to do by law. They finally unveiled it, and everybody who wanted the Civilian Review Board hated it because it didn't have powers, subpoena officers to come in. They're not even going to interview the officers. They're not even going to review cases. What they're going to do is they're going to ask the Internal Affairs Department, the Police Department, to come in and explain the investigation they did, and if they think it wasn't good enough, they're going to ask the chief to look back into it, and that's it. Now, this is a complicated discussion, and they said we don't have under state law in Connecticut, we don't have subpoena power. The answer from some of the activists who came to, they had a standing room only hearing, 3 hours, people blasting this thing. And some of the ideas from the activists made absolutely no sense. Like they said, the Civilian Review Board should determine how the budget is spent in the police department, which is crazy. I mean, we have a Board of Alders, and all these elected officials already do that, and a lot of stuff set in law and collective bargaining agreements. But they did say they believe that the Board of Alders has subpoena power, so therefore they can lend that to this commission until it gets it. And before I get to a very interesting third opinion I heard, what do you, Babs, you were on the police commission. What do you think?
I mean, this is what, you know, I'm of the mindset that people think that they want the civilian review board, and the time that it takes to be on a civilian review board is just going to, you're not going to have the quality of people that would require
to do it.
And
in the past, it didn't do much.
It's not going to do much. And everybody thinks that every case is going to be like CSI. It's not. It's going to be some boring,
But should a CISA group be able to bring in officers to, if they believe, because there's a lot of feeling, which I share actually, the police department cannot police itself. That they, you
can't, I'm of that
they
mindset
do, they do
too.
Very good job on the legwork on their investigations. I trust their investigations, but what the top brass chooses to do with it, I believe, covers up misconduct.
Well, then let me throw this out. Then if they want to use the Board of Aldermen that way, the Board of Aldermen can create a committee within themselves to address these particular issues and use their subpoena power for the greater good of these folks who want to have the civilian review board. So that way you get aldermanic oversight that covers everything from budget and behavior stuff and all that kind of
policy,
stuff.
Yeah.
So you could sort of do that. But you'd have to sort of craft it in such a way that you get interested aldermen with the wherewithal to sort of take
and
this
that's
on.
What it's, so now I'm going to tell you what John Valeka said. He's the retired assistant chief. He said he actually agrees with the activists that there needs to be outside independent scrutiny of how cops do their jobs. But the first thing he said is what Bav said. You need people with investigator experience. It doesn't need to be cops. It could be attorneys who have done these cases. It could be risk managers of private corporations. But the second thing he said is we already have that body. It's just not doing the job. So the Board of Police Commissioners is supposed to be the independent oversight. It's appointed by the mayor. So maybe you could change that or how they're appointed. But right now, it really doesn't look at these cases. It doesn't. It has subpoena power. Right now, it doesn't take an active role. But I want to tell you a story about the 1977. The Board of Police Commissioners were the ones who held weeks-long hearings into how the New Haven Police Department illegally wiretapped thousands of New Haveners and threw the machines into the harbor as evidence they had been fished out. And it started with bookies, then the Black Panthers, but activists, political opponents of City Hall, thousands of people illegally wiretapped. After all these hearings and everything, there was a lawsuit, and we actually had to pay people for being spied on. There was a guy named Daniel Greer, who's a rabbi, who was on the he was a lawyer. He was on that commission. They grilled these people. I actually got the confidential records when I wrote his book on the subject years later. And this was a great investigation, high quality. Brought the cops in. They revealed stuff they had revealed to nobody else. They had the legal authority to do it. They had the mission to do it. Why don't we just have that happen instead of a civilian review board?
Didn't you just say something about lending? Did I hear that right? That you're lending subpoena powers to the civilian?
Well, that's what some people are saying. They want the Board of Alders to say that the civilian review board be sort of a creature of the Board of Alders and be able. But the other thing is that the civilian review board as proposed would be an agency working out of the Corporation Counsel's office. The Corporation Counsel's office represents cops who are sued for misconduct. And if their agency they oversee finds that those cops acted wrong, that hurts their legal position and the city's financial position. So this is crazy.
You know, the bottom line is, oh gosh, I don't even understand why I create something that has no power, no teeth. What is the purpose of it? It's just so insulting.
Well, the advocates say it can act quicker than it used to. That within 60 or 90
days.
But it
won't. Nothing.
It's just adding a layer.
Nothing. It's just adding a layer. It's just false. It really makes government look so distrusting. You know, you can't trust government that would do something like this.
How does government look that they just bombed?
You're just giving out a blanket, you know, something that is going to do nothing.
Well, before
and that's exactly what, this is why people say, oh, things never change. And then they start distrusting their government because of this nonsense.
Well, before we wrap up, will we trust our government? They just bombed Syrian army base because of the use of chemical weapons.
Absolutely
after the
not.
World told the government of Syria not to use chemical weapons on civilians in your own civil war. They did it again.
But we
so these are the same people
who wanted to be refugees out of there.
Right.
So we want to protect them now from the people who are trying to kill them.
No. What has happened is that
we bombed the army base. We didn't bomb civilians.
I think we bombed this bombing.
Right. Marquise is right. We don't know the details later.
We bombed any civilians.
So Marquise, what were you saying?
I was just saying we don't think we bombed any civilians, and this just. It just came out of nowhere. It came out of somewhere. Obviously it came out of somewhere.
And where it came out of is because just last week, Thursday, you had Rex Tillerson over there in Turkey talking about the Assad regime being in power is left up to the Syrian people. But that gave a clear green light to Saddam to Assad to say, hey, you know what? America is turning their heads on us. They're totally nationalists now. So now that this has become something, you got the Secretary of State and the President of the United States who don't care about the words that they
and
put
And actually,
on you.
It's interesting that Joe brings that up because there's been this whole series of meetings with Trump administration and foreign governments where they've told authoritarian leaders who have committed widespread human rights abuses that we're going to be okay with it. We told Bahrain we would sell them weapons and lift a ban on that. We gave the green light to Saudi Arabia. Turkey has
Aren't the Russians supporting Assad, though?
Yeah, they are.
And they are supporting Assad. However,
Turkey, they've locked up all, and they're torturing some of them, every journalist, every academic.
And yet there is famine and starving people in the Sudan right now.
Yeah.
Who could benefit from some aid? Look.
Some humanitarian aid.
Now, let me give you the arguments for Trump doing it. Trump said that, and even though he at the time told Obama not to bomb because they crossed lines.
He did say 1,000 tweets.
Joe Ugly have the quote. Back in
when Assad used chemical weapons, Obama said it was a
line
you can't cross. Then he crossed and he didn't bomb.
Right. Trump tweeted.
He told them to stay
out. His first tweet was, we should stay the hell out of Syria. The rebels are just as bad as the current regime. What will we get for our lives and the billions of dollars? Zero. Then he went on to tweet, don't attack Syria. An attack that will bring nothing but trouble to the U.S. To the U.S. forces are making our country strong. Focus on making our country strong and great again.
So he's changed his mind.
No. This is the way he kept on tweeting. I'm not just going to just
talk about it now, Joe.
No, this is the most important one right here. We got two more very important ones, which is that he's talking about President Obama. He said President Obama must get congressional approval before attacking Syria. Big mistake if he does not. And then another one where he tweeted, what will we get for bombing Syria besides more debt and a possible long-term conflict? Obama needs congressional approval. Did he go for that?
And that's what I mean about nowhere.
Okay.
Okay, so, but Harry Gross is in the room. Lucy, would you like to be Harry?
No.
Okay, I will stand in for Harry.
Okay.
And Harry Joseph, you're listening. Tell me if I'm doing a good job. This is not what I believe.
I'm gonna wait for the door open.
Here's the argument for Trump doing it. Trump said those things before, and he changed his mind. He saw these images of these children who have been attacked by chemical weapons.
What is the first grade?
And he said
he can't see images to change his mind.
But what about those children that washed those refugees? Those bodies of those children that washed up.
He wasn't president at the time when he tweeted.
No.
He is now, though.
He didn't see images.
Closed the door on immigrants.
You change your mind depending on your position.
Oh, you know, he changed his mind. How convenient. You know what?
Well, you know what's interesting? What Senator Blumenthal said this morning. So the Democrats are all saying everything we said. You should have gone to Congress. You need a strategy. You're now just going to get more terrorists to hate us because you indiscriminately bombed. In one case, you have a whole parts of the world where you're allowing authoritarian leaders to abuse their people. You're not taking action. But Blumenthal did, Democratic Senator Blumenthal did say it sends a clear message to Assad that this isn't okay. And other people saying it sends a message, Schumer too, it sends a message to North Korea and Iran that if you're testing us, we're going to take military action. And I think there's going to be an element of this where people are going to say he listened to a serious military advisor who said we're going to have to show that we're taking a strong military stand at lines you can't cross.
And what if they do cross those lines? Boom!
You know, I just the thing that bothers me the most is this flimsy excuse for this. Mm-hmm. It's so flimsy. We could go all day. We could Google images all day of kids washing up on shores. Listen, we could show kids crossing the border who get hurt and killed and
these are the
and
same traffic, people they block traffic. From coming in with the travel ban.
But we don't see any of that, right?
Like, so, these are the same people.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, but the big question we haven't answered in all that discussion come this Tuesday is: should Nika's Grocery on Orange Street be allowed to move its freezers outdoor, even though they're going to be close to side yards and have a bigger kitchen? Because our people are up in arms on both sides of this deal, folks.
Right, they don't want it. They don't want it because it's ugly.
The people in our comments said, come to Westville.
All right. So you think Siri is tough. Go to the zoning board this week and see what they do about Nika's Market.
If East Rock doesn't want you, Nika's, we want you in Westville. Come on down.
And let's stay tuned. You know, all this night.
We have a rock.
We talked last week about this... whether there should, how much discipline should be from Michael Carter, the city's chief administrative officer, for telling union officials to take it outside. Read the New Haven Independent later today. There might be some new light shed on what that was all about.
Woo! Well, I'm glad she didn't fire him, because I don't think he deserved to be fired. But I'm going to go read the article. But, you know, Mayor Harper's a very calm and cool, collected woman. She's not, you know, she's not a Trump. She doesn't run by her emotions. She's not,
you sound like you got an ulterior motive over here. I just think
she's got a calm head.
I'm talking about you. I'm not talking about the mayor situation. You know, I heard you. I know you, Babs, and I know when you repeat something a few times, I got to stop questioning.
So there you know. There you see a joke. Ugly is fully recovered from his colonoscopy and the pain meds. He is back in action.
All you had to do was talk about world market, about world politics. I'm in.
Right. Well, thank you for joining us today at Dateline New Haven.
Thank you.
Thanks to the best pundits in the media universe, Babs Rawls-Ivey, Markeisha Ricks, Norma Rodriguez-Reyes, Lucy Gelman, and the man of many titles, Joe Ugly. Harry Dross, we missed you. Come back next week, please.
Harry! Okay.
We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. Now we know what it's like to be free. And this week with Passover and then Easter, maybe we'll know even a little more. We just got to remember to book our flight. So book and fly free with us all weekend long at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.